Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi, every single one of us thinks about the future. Some of us might be familiar with such a thing called futures trading. And of course, there's also this thing called futures planning, which is really about creating a plan for an individual or a group, especially coming off of people who suffer from disabilities. So that's futures planning. But today in our conversation, we're not talking about that sort of future. We're talking about the future that's unfolding before us and how we respond to it. We're talking about whether Christians should be so taken up by the future when God has asked us to trust Him. We're talking about how both the individual and the church can learn to anticipate the future. Is there actually a way to do this? Are we called to do this? And if we are called to do this, how best can we do this? And I can't think of another better person to talk about this than Cheryl Chung. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being here with me. Cheryl works at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy, and she's director of the executive education there, really teaching people about futures thinking and scenario planning. So we're really grateful that you can join us. Let's start off with the basic working assumption when we talk about futures thinking and scenario planning. What's behind this altogether?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much. It's great to get definitions out of the way. I think the first thing to understand about futures thinking is the plural. So futures with an S. You know, right. I think normally when all of us think about the future, we think of it as a singular destination or goal. Even the idea of this discipline of futures thinking is really to be open to the possibility of multiple futures. And then to understand the trends that might lead us to these multiple futures, try to figure out what does this mean for us, and to hopefully take some action in the present to be prepared for not just one possibility, but a range of possibilities that might occur tomorrow.
But sounds like from that working assumption, there is something that all these thinking and scenario planning, there's a purpose for it, right? You'd like to help me articulate what's that purpose. When you say, you know, they're multiple, and then how to read the signals and how to anticipate, maybe, you know, what if they're wild cards, what if they're black swans? So, but underneath all that sounds like there is a purpose. Is it stability? Is it more than that?
Yeah, that really depends on the organization. So, of course, in the context of the futures work that I do, it's mainly for public policy purposes. So that's for, you know, the well-being of society, the well-being of nations, economic growth, the thriving, I would say, of people, right? So I think that depends very much on the organization in question and what their goals and their values are. So, of course, you can say futures is, just understanding the trends, but the trends is for whom and for what purpose, right? Who is your clientele, who is your audience, who are your stakeholders?
Their
values, right? What do they want to be in the future? So that there is this aspect as well.
Very macro kind of work, I feel like. It's like a macro multidisciplinary thing. And so what exactly happens when you're doing futures work?
Yeah, so futures work, broadly you can think of it as, I would say, three big buckets.
You all like sit around the table and like, no, everybody's dreaming up scenarios. And you know how we're all very familiar, the futures work that we normally typically do is we sit around, do a cost-benefit analysis, worst-case scenario. I'm suspecting it's much more than that. So maybe you could tell us, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So we try not to think about just worst case scenarios. We try to also think about, kind of this range of, possibilities for the future, right? So you can think of it in roughly three buckets. So the first bucket is trying to understand what. So what are these trends or issues or tensions that might manifest themselves in the future that might affect what happens, let's say, in 10 years' time, 20 years' time. You know, so these are a little bit of, I would say, trend analysis, you know, trying to understand their impacts, trying to study more about what are the uncertainties in certain areas. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, you might see that, okay, artificial intelligence might be more important in the future, but how does that play out, right? Does it lead to, you know, the rise of certain kinds of corporations? You know, does it require new skill sets? You know, is that something that has a... are there social issues that arise from artificial intelligence affecting work, say? You know, so that's the what bucket. The so what bucket is then trying to say, okay, then let's picture, you know, once you start to put some of these trends together, so let's say you cross a geopolitical set of trends with social trends, with environmental trends, you know, what is the implications for, again, this entity in question, right? This decision maker, whether that's as narrow as an individual or as large as a country, you know, what does that mean? You know, what's the impact? You know, what are the implications? And in many cases, what we do is we try to tell stories about what that future will look like. Right. Stories are just scenarios are just a fancy word for stories, you know, but to tell each other stories about, okay, you know, in 10 years' time, if these things come to pass, it might look like this, right? Mm. And then the last part is the now what? You know, so I think it's important to, in this kind of work, to not just pontificate about the future for the sake of, you know, kind of an intellectual thought experiment, but ultimately to ask ourselves, what do we need to do now to prepare for this future, to be ready for this future, right? And I think that that's a really important aspect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you listed these three buckets, because it's kind of like a scaffold we use for sermons as well. What is this text about? So what? And now what? But yeah, okay. I haven't used that approach for my sermons in a long time, but it's quite refreshing that you should mention. I was just thinking, just the what also has maybe several ways you could approach it. One would be like an impending cultural or technological shift like AI. Another way the what could be can spring from a space where there is something you want, so that what could be a future you kind of like want to create, a reality that you are grappling with. So, you know, it could start from both pieces, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the more important question is the now what question, because I think it's what is a good scenario about the future, a good story about the future, what does that look like? And in my view, you know, it should, and we used this term earlier when we were chatting, it should afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, right? Okay. You know, so what does that mean? That means that for us, actually, we can be thriving in a bad scenario, but we can also do badly in a good scenario, right? So actually, that response and that action is a very important part of that process, right? And I think that as a Christian, particularly, you know, that also resonates very much with me. I think you don't always see things as they seem, right? Yeah. But I think having this understanding that, you know, just because things are not going well doesn't mean that there isn't a plan and a purpose for it, you know? And just because things are going well doesn't automatically mean that you are in God's favor or there is a plan and purpose, right? So I think those two things are hold as well.
True. But I also think that for, say, you know, because you guys are working at the policy level and all that, but for the average person on the ground, we only see the now what as it's working out. I mean, I don't know, somehow as you were talking, the whole situation of the casino in Singapore came to my mind. I do not know which arm of the government looked into that, but I'm just thinking, as a person on the ground, only came to know about the now what. We're going to have this thing built. It's good for our economy. And then, of course, people are just responding to the now what, but they never thought about the what. And then we didn't think about the so what. Like, you know, we didn't think that, for example, it's related to the need for us to maybe generate more income, revenue, and you know, stuff for our treasury and all that. So I guess, does it get frustrating for you guys then? I mean, working at that level, and then sometimes you just think, these people on the ground, they're just not getting it, when they don't realize that it's been years of thinking and planning and crunching figures and, you know, telling stories and imagining possibilities. And finally, we have to land on this possibility. Does it get frustrating for you guys?
I think futures work is frustrating.
Futures work is frustrating.
I think futures work is frustrating, full stop. Okay. You know, I think, and there are many sources of that frustration, but I think one thing I do hope, I feel very passionately about in Futures work is, Futures work should make us good at understanding assumptions and uncovering hidden assumptions, which means that we should be able to understand different worldviews, right? So I think personally, my view is that futures thinking is particularly important in public policy because there are so many different stakeholders with competing worldviews, right? Exactly. And at a minimum, we should be able to understand that there are competing worldviews and articulate what they are, right? And the better we are at that, the more we can bring in different people into the conversation, right, about the future and what future they want, right? I think that personally, I do feel for public policy, that participatory foresight element does become quite important. But it's not only governments who think about the future we want, right? Companies also define the future we want through their products and services. And, I think that again, this skill of being able to have the tools, to have a container to discuss, you know, areas of differences and contention and contradiction, and to be able to say that, okay, you know, we are coming together to have this conversation because we all are invested in this future.
Right.
I think that's an important skill set to have.
Yeah, actually, that's a very important part, the whole softer side of things, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, we are creating a future, or whether it's an organization or society or a church or a country, it ultimately is about how it's going to impact the lives of the people who are going to live into this future. Actually, when you mentioned futures work being frustrating, I was thinking that another source of frustration might be the fact that as Christians, we're just supposed to trust God, right? I mean, he's sovereign and all that. And then James chapter 5 says, you know, we talk about planning this, and then James advises us that we should just learn to say, if God willing, you know. Sorry to synthesize it a bit, but and that passage is, you know, sometimes taken to mean that the work that you do is a little bit suspect because it's like there's this tension now. How do you personally deal with this tension?
Yeah, no, for me, it's been very interesting. And I think this preparing for this podcast in particular has given me such a wonderful opportunity to think a bit more deeply and consolidate, I suppose, half-formed thoughts about this dual identity as both a Christian as well as a futurist. You know, and it's one of my favorite passages is the consider the lilies of the field passage, right? So it's therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. And sufficient is the day for its own trouble. And yet I make a living and I've made a living for close to 15 years now, exactly worrying about the future, making, and believing that the day is not sufficient for its own troubles, right? I think to me, this duality kind of bears out in the larger paradox of the sovereignty of God and the responsibility of man, right? What does that balance? And I think whether you're a futurist or not, I think every Christian has to wrestle with this particular paradox, right? It's the, do the work and pray, and I think that's really important. So for me, I think the question that I'm starting to ask myself a little bit more is not so much, you know, to debate this paradox, but to say what's the right posture if you have to live this paradox, right? And I do feel that Jesus' words in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he tells his disciples to watch and pray, you know, that this really should be the battle cry of a Christian futurist, right? You know, because there's a part of which is watching, right? There is a responsibility to be alert, to look out, that he who has ears must hear, he who has eyes must see, you know? And that's the trend analysis, that's the doing your research, doing your homework, understanding shifts. You know, I think that part is important. Mm. But it's accompanied with the part to pray, you know? And because watching without praying, you might know what's happening in the world, but how is God moving? You know, what's God's heart for these trends? It would be a complete black box, right? But I think the praying part is such an important discipline. And we talked about futures being frustrating, right? you know, one of part of the frustration is that some people just don't care about the future, right? They don't care about making the future better, you know. But this idea of being to able to trust that the future is in God's hand, knowing that He holds the future, I think that that's super, super important. Those two things definitely must come together.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can, you know, kind of add to that, the third thing I would say would be then to act in faith, right? Mm-hmm. You know, is this idea of like you must still implement a strategy, right? You still have choices to do that you must kind of put forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people will ask, you know, oh, it's like futures like being a prophet, you know, mm-hmm. days of old, right? And you know, I mean, of course, and that's your doomsday scenario, right? but I think the important part was of the whole message of the prophet is to repent, right? Is to
mm-hmm.
that something that you still must do today, you know, to prepare for the future. Yeah. So I mean, it's this dynamic tension between this watching and praying, which I think is important, right? And for us as Christians, you know, definitely very meaningful discipline to build up.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, in some ways, God is a futurist. And He has kind of revealed the future for us. And yet He has not revealed it enough so that we have to study. And, you know, like the sons of Issachar, we have to know the signs of the times. And we lean into that future that God has broadly described to us. And we have to find our way through it, right?
That's right.
So I think the tension becomes when you're so right about the posture. Not so much the tension, but the difficulty and the almost the betrayer, as if you want to put it very starkly, comes when we trust in the futures that we are perceiving or planning rather than God. I think it's a trust issue. I don't know. I mean, maybe because of my own wiring and makeup, I plan. I don't know of anybody who doesn't plan. Don't plan much, but I think we all plan some degree.
Yeah.
But it's fair to say that your work is a lot of planning into, you know, we're talking about years, maybe decades down, and it's huge. And I can, I think the objection people have is, well, I can plan my day, or I can plan my week, or I can plan how to improve my work. You are dealing with something much larger. And I think for the average person, that just feels uncomfortable. That just feels like it's God's job. It's not possibly, you know. So maybe that's where the discomfort is coming from. But
in futures work, there's this saying, right, that it's not so much the planning, there's not so much the plan that's important, but the planning process, right? So it's the idea that you're thoughtful about it, you know, you consult, you bring in, you know, diverse voices, you know, these things are important. And it's that, again, it's that discipline, right? And then it's not so much that you're wedded to a particular plan, but it's through the act of having been thoughtful about it, you know, also changes you, right? It also changes an organization, or just changes yourself as a Christian, you know? So I think that that's also the other part, right? That it's not the plan per se, it's really the planning. And the desire to be a good steward of what has been entrusted to you, right? You know?
In fact, you and two of your friends, Wendy and Dawn, engaged in some futures thinking for the church because of COVID, right? Do you want to share with us some of that experience and some of the things that emerged from that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Wendy, who was on your podcast a little while ago, and John, who's actually my first boss in futures work, you know, so the three of us got together to do a series of workshops. And the central question was, what would the future of the church look like post-COVID, especially if COVID lasts? Right. Yeah. And we did this in the middle of circuit breaker, you know, so we were, you know, weren't able to gather people physically. And I think at that time, definitely churches were facing quite a high level of anxiety about what the future was going to hold for them. Right. Because suddenly thrust into a situation of very great uncertainty. I think that was about the point where churches had to close. their physical doors, you know, and then what does it mean, right, to imagine this new future? And one very common response for this anxiety is to say, oh, things are going to go back to normal and I just wait it out.
Yeah.
Right. And definitely we saw that. So what we'd done for this series of workshops. So the first workshop we did was getting people to respond to a set of scenarios that we drafted. And we'd written up three scenarios. So the first one was unimaginatively named depression. You know, so a question around what does it mean if COVID lasts for a very long time, you know, and the recovery is very slow. You know, what are the then the other two scenarios around, you know, what if the recovery has a different pattern, right? You know, so for example, what if the recovery leads to an extremely unequal recovery? So certain parts of society recover very quickly, but certain parts continue to suffer for a long time. Or what does it mean if everybody bounces back super fast, right?
And everybody and then wants the third one.
Yes, of course. You know, but you know, we get the future we're given, right, in a way. So we had a wonderful group of friends and friends of friends who were from different parts of the Singapore church. So from parachurch organizations to churches to, you know, people in theological education, you know, various aspects and kind of matched everybody up and made them think about what were the first and second order consequences on the church if any of these scenarios were to play out.
Yeah.
We then did a second workshop where we talked a little bit more about the themes, right? You know, so arising from the first workshop, you know, what were some of these themes you wanted to discuss, and then brought in another group of people. And the second group was interesting because we asked people from the first group, bring a ministry partner, you know, somebody who you trust, who does, you know, who will wrestle with these issues with you, you know, and then we can have another conversation, right? You know, so that was my first experience applying my professional tools into the context of the church. And I think for me, there was definitely, I think I felt a lot of empathy for really this anxiety that people feel, you know, whether it's in the church context or outside the church context, when you are in a very high uncertainty and volatile position, right? And In my professional work, I do talk about futures as an organizational anxiety coping mechanism. You know, and the reason for that is that, you know, to be able to have a set of tools, you know, a set of processes that you can undertake, you know, as a sort of like a discipline, you know, that when you do feel yourself in these high anxiety situations, you can return to them, right?
What are some of these tools and that you guys use?
So, I think the specific tools are maybe not the important point, but it's, again, the container for conversation to really talk about what is important, right? So, in the first workshop, one of the things we asked people to do was to share an artifact of how COVID had changed their church life, right? You know, and in many of people's sharings, they talked about, you know, returning back to a simpler way of doing church. You know, and then, you know, returning back to contemplative practice, you know, you know, being grateful for, you know, these opportunities to reach out to, let's say, different people through online media, you know, things like that, right? And I think those were opportunities also created by a very difficult set of circumstances, right? And the ability to look at the set of circumstances a bit dispassionately, you know, and put a little bit of emotional distance between you and the circumstances and really ask yourself, you know, actually, what is God saying in this scenario? You know, and do I have to be in a good scenario for God's will to be done or purposes to unfold? I think it's just another way of trying to have that conversation, right? So it was definitely a very interesting experience. And to be honest, the biggest thing I took away from it was that it's just such a joy to work with friends who know you professionally and also know you spiritually, right? So that was just such a blessing and such an amazing opportunity to do that during COVID. Yeah.
And did you observe whether any of the church leaders or ministry leaders were either somewhat surprised by the process, or did anybody articulate that it was something they feel helped with, and it would be a process that they will bring back into how they the organizations in the future?
Yeah, definitely. So I think even within the government, it's not a super common way of planning for everything, you know, and it's from a strategic planning perspective, it's just adding another tool to the toolkit, right? The fundamental question we're asking is really, how do we make better decisions for the future? You know, and this is just one of them. But definitely we had a lot of interest because it would, for most people, it would have been the first time they've ever heard of futures. Well, and definitely the first time they've been involved in a futures process. And again, it's not just the tools, right? It's also the timing, you know, is that we have found ourselves in a particularly unusual situation, you know, where this set of tools has some value. And I think people were also looking for ways to have these difficult conversations even within their own congregations.
Yeah, I think it's very fascinating. I would like to see more of us more familiar with this. I think from what you're saying, really the value of this is very much in all the conversations you can have, where you broaden the conversation and not limit it to the decision makers, as it were. But you broaden it and you bring in what you call the other stakeholders, basically means people that will be impacted by the decision, and take more time with the decision-making process, being more consultative, hearing from the ground, and maybe, you know, like sit with the decision, sit with the process, except of course certain times when it's really urgent. So maybe if we can learn to do this in a more rhythmic and more regular way, it begins to shape us into a more discerning kind of people. I think that will be because I feel like decision making on the whole for most of us is we kind of operate on default mode, and then our decision making usually is very crisis oriented. We have a problem, let's have a meeting, solve this problem.
I understand.
And you sometimes feel like an organization or family or even your own life, you seem to be like darting from one crisis to the next. And then you can't quite see where is God taking you on this trajectory. But actually, God is taking us on some kind of trajectory. It's extremely meaningful. The trajectory in itself is a witness to God's grace and His goodness and His glorious revelation in our life. But I mean, if we're just darting around from crisis to another, or what, celebration to another, whatever, then I just feel there's something lost to us. If we, you know. So
But that's why Jesus says, "Watch and pray," right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you have to watch for something as well, and I think.
Yeah.
One of my reflections, having now done this work for, you know, almost 15 years now, is that doing this work has made me a more engaged person, right?
I was going to ask you, how has this work affected you personally, and how has it impacted your work with God?
Yeah. You know, actually, when I was preparing for this talk, one of the songs that came into my head is, I don't know whether you sing it in your church, but it's called God of the City. And the story behind it, so the lyrics go, you know, you are the king of this people, you are the lord of this nation, you know, and it says, well, greater things have yet to come, you know, greater things are yet to be done, you know, in this city, right? And it came to my mind just because, you know, it's this idea of watching and being able to see in the city what God's heart is, right? And I definitely, being a futurist and having to read about geopolitical, social, economic trends all day long, every day, has given me many more things to pray about. You know, because it's, you know, I think you see systemic social injustice, you know, these issues differently when you spend more time watching and having a language to then articulate that, right? So to me, I think that primarily, you know, is, I think, one of the gifts of my professional life to my spiritual life. I think the second one is, as I mentioned before, you know, having had people like Wendy and Dawn, you know, and many, many, many more other people who I've met through my professional work, you know, who have become very important to me spiritually, right? And interestingly enough, not all of them are Christian, right? I'm thinking of a couple of friends who are of the Islamic faith who have also, you know, this deep concern about the world, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, so that's also been an incredible, incredible blessing. And I think, you know, just having the language to talk about diversity and worldview, you know, with a bit more of that emotional separation, I think for me has been such an important skill to learn, you know, because I think it's so easy to just want to impose your worldview on someone else, you know, and to have the schools, to have these, the tools, to have these conversations, you know, respecting everybody's worldview, right? And understanding that where I come from, my beliefs may also be a worldview and sometimes not necessarily a biblical one, right? Mm. Or particularly godly one. to be transparent about that is also quite useful. You know, so those have been real gifts, lah. And, you know, I think the last thing is, you know, to be honest, if I didn't have meaningful work to do, I'd be a crazy person, you know? Just, you know, I wouldn't be a very nice person at all. So, you know, I'd be completely, you know, bitter and unhappy and whatever, right?
Well, I'll say that's probably true for everybody, my dear.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it just so happens that my work is in futures and you know, I've gotten very great joy out of this season, but, you know, just having meaningful things to do with my time and spend this life wisely, right, has been a great joy, a source of blessing too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So if there's somebody listening in and they're curious about futures work and they'd love to be a futurist, where should they get started? Is there a school of futurists out there somewhere?
You know, well, we do futures classes in my professional work, but that's not the point of the podcast.
Sure.
You know, to be honest, I would just say that, you know, we spend all this time talking about technological developments and you know, like new ways of doing things, but you know, there's a part of me that thinks, actually, is there a more sophisticated technology than conversation, right? And having good conversation with different people about the future, what they see to be, you know, important to them in the future, what they would want to see, what do they observe that might change the future, you know? So the questions don't have to be particularly sophisticated, you know, but if everybody had an intentional conversation with somebody, maybe even different from you or close to you, you know, but, you know, started to have conversations about what do you see the world looking like post-COVID, say? Where do you see the church looking like post-COVID? You know, what are some of these possibilities for us? You know, I think that is already a very meaningful way to start. And then the tools and the, you know, methods can come on later, right? But I think it's that posture, you know?
Absolutely.
And then back to the posture idea, you know, is really this idea of watching and praying, you know? And especially at a time like this, right? I think... So I actually asked Dawn, I sent her a text when I was preparing for this podcast, and she said, yeah, you know, we really want to explore this idea of, you know, what's the role of prayer in futures work, you know? And like I say, futures is very frustrating, right? The future is full of uncertainty. You know, you have this illusion of control that you can do a lot about it, but actually there's very little you can do in most cases. But you can always wait, you can always fast, and you can always pray.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and that is something every one of us can do. I mean, to very
exactly.
Yeah, degrees.
You know, and a lookout to review, right? What the future holds. Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Cheryl.
Absolutely, such a pleasure.
I think it's just so important for us to know that nobody, you know, at any one point of time, none of us lives in a vacuum. We all have come from a history, we're headed into a future, and in our organization, that future has had that organization has also had a history. There are trends, there are tensions, there are stresses. And I really love what you led us towards at the end of the conversation about learning to talk to people, learning to maybe step into someone's shoes, learning to pause and not presume that whatever we experience is all there is to reality and that it is normative. For example, right now with the situation, many people feel like not being able to sing when they go back to church makes the church less. Mm. And the point is, you know, there are many Christians all over the world who just can't sing, because if they sing, they'll get arrested and put in jail. So singing doesn't constitute being church. Although, of course, it's wonderful to be able to sing and praise God with our voices. So, yeah, there is great value. And also what you shared about, you know, being open to other worldviews. Because honestly, it's tempting sometimes for Christians to impose our worldview on other people. And then it becomes hard for us to collaborate and build a common future together when, you know, we can't get to the table and equally say what is at stake. But chances are we might agree more than disagree about what is at stake, and we can work from that place, right? Of agreement. So you have left us with many good thoughts, and of course also the fact that it doesn't undermine that we believe in a sovereign God and trust in him simply because we have those conversations or we engage in some dreaming and thinking about the future and even planning for the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both the so what and the now what.
My last closing thought, if I may, it's like I kind of joke throughout the podcast that it's watch and pray should be the battle cry of the Christian futurist, right? But the Matthew account of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, he says this to his closest disciples, right? And it's this kind of like very anguished, sorrowful scene. But he asks his disciples to stay and watch with him, right? And I think that again, in this frankly quite anxious and uncertain times, that companionship for the journey, to be able to again check in with friends and look towards the future together, I think is really, really important for this particular time. Yeah.
Wow, that's a really good word. Yes, watching and praying at the macro level, but really where it happens is also at the micro level. Just one-on-one with life on life with another friend. Watching and praying, let me watch over your life also and see where you've come from, where you're headed. Pray along with you and trust God together with you. That as your future unfolds and mine unfolds, ours unfold together. And God is already in the midst of it and he's leading us to somewhere better than we can ask or imagine.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Amen to that.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Yeah, God bless you. Thank you for the wonderful work you do at your professional life and all the praying you do because of your professional life. I'm a strong believer that without prayer, the world would have gone amok a long time ago. It's definitely very important. Yeah, so everyone listening in, futures thinking, scenario planning, I think it's something that is important. Let's pray for the people in leadership who do that. Let's encourage our church leaders as they embark on that. And if they call on you to sit in a conversation and contribute your thought, please join in. Because your story matters, your voice matters, your history matters. And every single one of us is part of this edifice of praise unto God that God has put together. He calls us a spiritual house, right? That we're all living stones in his building. So let's all do our bit. Thank you again, Cheryl. God bless you.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.